Welcome to Decades From Home, a podcast about Germany. I'm Nick Houghton, 40%German.com, and I'm joined by our man in the Nürnberger land, Simon Maddox, coming straight out of Bonn, stalwart producer Simon Josie, to discuss the weird and wonderful side of living in Germany. Hey, Simon. Hey, producer Simon.
Halli, hello.
Kia ora.
Have we heard halli, hello before? I don't feel like we have.
I think I have said it once before.
And what was that, producer Simon?
Kia ora. That's the very New Zealand greeting. I mean, if we're doing Welsh greetings last time, we're certainly doing New Zealand greetings this time.
Do you know, Simon, what Kia ora means to British people?
It's an orange juice, isn't it?
It's a tropical fruit drink, yeah.
Is it the totally tropical taste, or is that Mbongo?
Oh, that's Mbongo. Mbongo, they drink it in the jungle. with a really racially insensitive branding system. I'm not sure what it looks like today.
I think it was in the 80s. But Lilt has the totally tropical taste. Sorry.
Oh, Lilt,
I'm getting
Lilt
my,
is the totally tropical.
My 80s beverage adverts mixed up. Mbongo, you drink in the Congo.
Yeah, that's it. You're right. It's an orange and lemon flavor drink. I got my Mbongo and my Kia ora mixed up. Kia ora, what year do you reckon it was launched in Great Britain?
I'm going to say 1956.
1917.
What?
1917. Yeah.
Kia ora. That explains the advertising, at least. Jeez. There was a dash of the old imperialism in there, wasn't there? Kia ora. I'll be your friend.
You can still buy it. Asda still sell it. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure they do.
There is also a Sauvignon Blanc called Kia ora. I don't think it's the same company.
I wonder, is it one of those New Zealand wine brands which is basically not available in New Zealand? It's just for the export market only.
Well, the website is winerack.asia. So I don't think it's even some Chinese producer, maybe.
Yeah, I was thinking about the beverages that I see the students drink at university. Club Mate. Is that Club Mate? I've never had it, but it seems very, very popular with the kids.
It's nice, but you should try it.
I don't know. I'm not a big soft drink guy. I gave up the Mbongos and the Kioras a long time ago.
It's time to live again.
Oh, I like the Schorle, man. That's the way forward. We went out for dinner on I think it was Friday, and there was a bit of hullabaloo because one of the people we were with wanted to order it was like an apple Schorle, and the waiter went, oh, you should have maracuja saft. Maracuja Schorle is the best. And there was like an argument because the people we were with were like, no, we don't want that. That's not what we want.
I am partial to a maracuja saft Schorle. I do think they are good. Yeah.
But I just thought it was funny because usually, like, if it was Britain and the waiter suggested something, even if the person didn't like it, they'd just instinctively, under the pressure of the situation, just go, yeah, sure, just give me that. Give me that.
That sounds really good. I'll try that.
Why not? Whereas in Germany, nope, don't want that.
You will not upsell me on anything.
And I was like, more power to you. It's great. And the waiter was quite chatty, even at the end. After I'd paid and everyone had gone, and it was just me and him, and I said, like, oh, well, we're just going back because they've got a babysitter and the kids are sleeping there. Oh, you should bring them with you and have dinner with them. And I was like, yeah, I'm not having a two-year-old. Like, I'm trying to eat a steak while the two-year-old's trying to, like, take the steak knife and stab me in the hand. I don't think that's a good idea. It's like an awful idea. So I'm not entirely convinced that all of his ideas were great, but either way, I'll have to try a maracuja saft, I think.
That's good. That's good stuff. Yeah.
Speaking of maracuja saft, did you have one when you went on your adventure to the Allianz Arena to watch Bayern Munich versus Tottenham? Was it Thursday?
No, I didn't have a maracuja saft. Yeah, it was Thursday on, the dates are a bit all over the place at the moment. So it's Thursday the 7th of August. So this might be like a month after.
Who knows when this is going to be released?
We're in holiday season here at Decades From Home and everyone is about to take their breaks. And so we're recording in batches. So hello from the distant past.
Yeah, it was great, honestly.
The second heat wave is just about to start here, so that places the timeline for you. I was able to go and see the friendly game between Bayern Munich and my beloved Tottenham Hotspur Football Club on 7th. And my lovely wife was able to score a couple of corporate seats through work, and that was a first for me to sit in corporate seats. And I'll tell you what, Bayern Munich corporate experience is pretty bloody good. I'm not gonna complain.
How is it different from the match day experience that you get if you just bought a ticket?
It's interesting because we went through the same entrance to the stadium as we would have done the last the last game we saw against Frankfurt. So we walked through the same place. I was like, oh, this all very familiar. There's the like fast food Ecker here. I can go and get some pommes. I can get a currywurst. I could probably get a schnitzel, get beers or anything. But then there's like a door with security guys on it. And you walk through there and they look at your QR code. Ah, yes, you're allowed in. And then there's turnstiles you have to scan again. And then you turn a corner and there's escalators inside the building going up three floors. And you get to the top and there are men and women in suit jackets giving you a look to be like, do you know what you're doing here or are you new?
And are you new?
I definitely had the face of like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And this guy came over and was like, oh, let me look at your tickets. And like, oh, table five, follow me, follow me. Takes us to a table. And from this table, it was just by a big window and I could see the big screen. I could see the Tottenham players warming up. He's like, do you want to get some food now? Because by the half time, it'll only be desserts available. So I look at my wife, like, yeah, we'll get some quick food. So I grabbed a plate, went to the buffet and picked up some smoked salmon. So that's my first time eating smoked salmon at a football stadium.
Very nice.
I had a lovely couscous salad.
That's
bread.
Not something you hear every day.
No. Some lovely bread. There was a prawn salad. I'm not sure what else was in it, but it was all very, very nice. So I quickly wolfed that down, ordered a drink, was delivered over, didn't have to go and get a drink. And then as I was finishing my smoked salmon, the whistle blew and the game had kicked off. Unfortunately, we had some bad traffic going to the stadium. So what should have been an hour and a half journey took three and a bit. So we did miss out on the opportunity to really gorge on the food.
Oh, that's a shame.
Main courses that day, we just had starters, but main courses was, there was some sort of like pasta dish that looked very, very nice in like a proper Parmesan wheel. So like the pasta cooked inside it. It looked really good. And then we went to our seats and the seats are lovely. They're like upholstered and they've got sort of like winged sides. So you really like snuggle into it. And like the angle of the seats is so that someone could have been like 2.5 meters tall, sat in front of me, and I wouldn't have been disrupted by that at all. So like you could have the tallest person with the biggest hat and you would see everything. We were pretty much on the halfway line. So the view was really...
Yeah, you sent a photo. It looked amazing.
It was a perfect spot. And sat down. Nobody in seats on either side of us. They turned up like 45 minutes late and then ate instead of watching the game. And behind us, I didn't notice this at all until my wife pointed out, was Lena Oberdorf, injured and starlet of the women's football team. She was there with a group of other girls. Could have been other Bayern players. I've no idea. But yeah, my wife, filled with excitement, turned around and said to her in German, oh, you were really missed at the Euros. And Lena said, thank you. And that was our star interaction for the day. Game was good. First half, Bayern went ahead really quickly. Harry Kane goal. Nice to see. Hurt my heart. Then they got a penalty. Harry missed that, which I think it's his way of saying that he still loves us. I think he missed it on purpose. Then it was 1-0 at halftime. Everything was pretty good. Went in at halftime and there were desserts available at that point. I'm not much of a dessert eater, but I will just quickly read to the audience what the options were for this. So first thing, Eton Mess. An Eton Mess is a classic dessert created at Eton School. That says everything you need to know. It is the most upper class dessert possible. Lemon tart with an E. Tart with an E because it's fancy in French. Dough and Chaux mousse au chocolat noir. And finally, punch schnitter, which is a punch slice, if you can't translate that on your own. But what I had was a lovely homemade pretzel. And I know for a fact that Lena Oberdorf also had a pretzel because I saw her grabbing herself one. So I had the same dessert as a German international starlet. So yeah, that was pretty cool. Second half kicked off and then Bayern scored three more goals. I saw my team lose 4-0 and it was the most fun I'd ever had watching us lose. Yeah, so it was lovely. A lovely day out. And on the way home, I drove the second fastest I've ever driven in my car, and we got home in amazing time. So yeah, it was a good experience.
I just get out before the crowd start leaving.
No. We waited until well after kickoff. Jana had got a glass of champagne. So we were watching like the teams like warm down while she was drinking champagne. Went to the car park and then stood in a queue for 40 minutes without moving at all. But once we were out on the motorway, I made up for it. It was fine.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It was great.
I'm sure you did.
I was going to ask, did you get a selfie with Lena Oberdorf? And then I thought, oh, shit. You should have taken the opportunity to ask her if Georgia Stanway could come on the podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah, I did. I did think that that was my moment. But then I thought the podcast ends in a matter of weeks. So the chance of that occurring is zero at this point. So
we would have we would come out of retirement for that episode, I think.
Fair. We do have a selfie which we took in front of Lena Oberdorf, but she is not in it.
Almost counts.
We respected her privacy way too much, but we have a photo. Yeah. And like, that's where she was. She was sitting there.
I don't know if I'd want a selfie. Like, I feel like it's sort of, I don't know. I don't know what I'd do with it. Like, I'd show it to people and go, oh, I met this person. Like, I don't know. I don't know that I need to tell anyone. I could like tell you, oh, I met. You could do what you say, like, oh, I met this person. Oh, that's cool. But I don't know if you need to have the selfie.
I kind of get it. But one thing we did see, which was really troubling to watch, was in the halftime break, I was standing there eating my pretzel, waiting for my wife to come back from the toilet. Yeah. And suddenly I saw Alphonso Davies walk past Bayern, left back. Is he left back or right back? Wing back.
So he's wing back.
He's a wing back and Canadian international. And I think the fastest man in the Bundesliga.
I believe that was his start.
He is at least Muy Rapido. And he walked past quickly, and there was like a gaggle of Bayern fans shouting, hey, Davies! And the man's just been to the toilet and you're harassing him. And this is like the business section. Like people there were like corporate representation. It was embarrassing. I felt really bad for him having his privacy, like just taken away from him that way, and also for the guy shouting Davies, I was like, you're a full grown man in a Bayern kit, just like calm down, just have a pretzel, have a bit of cake.
Exactly. I mean, this is exactly why I'm glad the podcast never sort of like exploded, because you know, I want to be able to go down to Rewa on a Saturday morning and not get, you know, pestered for autographs and stuff like that.
Oh, I don't think that was ever a worry that was going to happen. But
well, although last time I had a house party, a garden party, Nick, you came and there was a fan there who was speaking.
The person
to
who
you.
Listened to the podcast, sure, yeah. Sure. There's someone who listened to the podcast. That was nice. But it's not like Beatlesmania. It wasn't like I was beating them up with a shitty stick or anything. Like, come on.
You got compliments from him, though.
Yeah, no, it's nice.
I didn't get any fucking compliments from him. He didn't say anything to me that night.
Okay, what can I say, you know? It's right place, right time.
So I'm Nick Houghton, and here's my co-host.
I think you were busy doing something. It was dark.
I was running around like a blue-ass fly all night.
It's what you do at all your parties, attending to the various guests.
Yeah, I need to be a shittier host. That's what I need to do.
Exactly. Why, if you were just a shittier host, who would have gone swimming?
Get your own stuff. Your bellends.
But I don't know. I think it sounds like you've had a blast. And none of these sort of corporate events can be a bit iffy, and you're never sure if they're going to be enjoyable. And I think you saw with the Alphonso Davies situation, the sort of worst side of it, sort of entitled people. But it does seem that you had like a lovely time. Although I feel like eating mess is a tragedy of a choice to put on your dessert menu if you're going to choose an English dessert. Spotted dick, surely. Come on.
Spotted dick would have been a much better choice.
Fucking yeah. Obvious.
And there is also a thing called Tottenham cake. They could have done that. It's pink and lovely. It's a vibrant piece of cake. It's a Tottenham cake.
Does it have custard on it?
No. It's just a sponge cake with a lovely pink frosting on it. Hyungmin's son likes it. I miss you. I miss you, Sonny. I miss you so much. Genuinely. That was a lot. I've never been more upset about a player leaving my club. I know I wasn't planning to talk about this, but like, I haven't been able to recover. And every single day, something comes up on Reddit and I'm just like, I miss him. I miss him so much. I miss you, Sonny.
I've become so like detracted or separated from football in such a, like a, I don't know, It's not even on my algorithm anymore. I'm quite happy.
Your star player is now refusing to ever play for the club again.
This is boring. Honestly, it's the most boring soap opera. And like, what I do enjoy is every time they interview the coach, he's just like, yeah, he's not playing because he's being a dick.
The story doesn't change.
I mean, it's pretty much it. I feel like that's what he said. If he was me, that's what he would have said.
Between the lines, that is what he said. Yeah.
Hands up. I don't think it's any kind of surprise if I admit that I have less than a passing knowledge about German club life. I've been to German clubs, sure, but I wouldn't necessarily trust any of my recollections of nights out from almost a decade ago. Looking at my fellow hosts, I sense they too have a foggy memory of smoke-filled rooms and pulsating techno or garage. Was it punk? Hip-hop? Honestly, listeners, it's hard to tell with these two. Could be any genre of music. Regardless of how many years it's been since any of us crossed the threshold of an honest-to-goodness club, I'm sure we can all feel a certain sadness to learn that Schwuz in Neukölln, Germany's oldest queer club, is facing closure due to bankruptcy. In an Instagram post on Thursday, Schwuz informed their followers that the club had filed for insolvency. Quote, one of the largest queer clubs in Berlin, Germany, perhaps Europe, is on the brink, it read. But we don't want to give up. A fundraising campaign launched recently is supposed to help the club stay on its feet. However, the appeal did not meet the goal of €150,000. In fact, it wasn't even close to being reached. A total of just €3,220 was raised. It's a very small amount. I think it speaks to a certain lack of support. But Schwuz's managing director, Katja Jäger, said the economy, an aging clientele, and the crisis in the Berlin club scene had taken its toll. Surging rents and electricity prices have put many Berlin venues, clubs, and bars out of business, despite a short-lived post-COVID revival. The term Clubsterben, or death of clubs, is now being used to describe the situation. This morbid feeling is perhaps felt more acutely by the gay communities in Berlin, since this is the second major club to face insolvency. Buscher Club, a historic gay and lesbian club, closed 2 weeks ago after four decades, also blaming rising costs. So what do you make of the story? Is this the change in club culture across the country that we're seeing? Will we see places like this reopen again, do you think, once they're all closed? And should the government, do you think, step in to protect certain spaces, as some have asked the Berlin Senate to do? So what do you think, guys?
It kind of feels too late for the government to step in and rescue the situation, sadly. It would be a really nice thing to do because, of course, the Berlin club scene is something that attracts thousands of tourists every single month. It is iconic. It is something that probably does deserve some level of protection. But of course, the reality is that these clubs are becoming more and more expensive to run because of rising electricity costs and other just increased inflation costs across the board there. So, I mean, the clubs we mentioned there indeed are iconic and really significant in the culture. But there are other places like Renata and Watergate, two other like really, really famous Berlin clubs that are closing or facing closure soon, some of them over 20 years old. And so whether these are going to be replaced in any way, shape or form is really hard to say. Mm. I mean, there are lots of things. I mean, the general decline of that industry, people are going out less these days because of the cost of going out has increased so much. And people have kind of adjusted to doing it once or twice as opposed to a weekly thing. Gentrification is, of course, something that always features in this kind of discussion. Berlin nightclubs are historically in places that weren't super nice places to live originally and now are becoming nicer and nicer and more gentrified, raising local costs as well. So it's challenging. Is there a cultural shift that we're experiencing? Hard to know. I am so far beyond my clubbing years now. It has literally been decades. And I really have to rely very much on external sources to have much of an input on this.
Yeah, last club I went to was that DJ set that I did in a club in sort of January. And it didn't feel like clubs had changed. And it was like the student night. And I left the club at like 1 a.m. And it was like, busy enough. It's kind of what you'd expect. Nothing too alarming, not too busy, not too quiet. But it didn't feel massively different in sort of the little village of Augsburg. But I do wonder, I think the difference between clubs closing versus sort of specifically gay and lesbian clubs, I think that was what I was wondering is, it'd be nice to think that these clubs are closing because we don't need them anymore because everyone's integrated and everyone, it doesn't matter whether you're gay or lesbian, you don't need specific spaces. It'd be nice to imagine that was the reason. It's fucking not though, is it? And my worry then is, do you lose a little bit of the culture, you know, given that how influential these places have been to the sort of the scene in Berlin, you know.
I mean, the Berlin Club Commission has formed, and they estimate that half of clubs could close by the end of the year. I mean, that is, I mean, to use the German word, was it Klubsterben? If you're losing half the clubs in within a year, that's really, really hard to consider any way that that's going to, how can you fill that kind of void culturally or nightlife-wise? And of course, most of these are going to be massive, massive empty venues.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And that's not good for any neighborhood to have that kind of empty space, just sitting idle. But yeah, I mean, landlords, of course, are a major factor in this as well. We see this in pubs. We see this in other social places where a place can be doing perfectly well and a landlord goes, aha, here's my opportunity. I'm going to hike the rent up double, or I'm going to put all sorts of strings attached on it. For example, having to take services from a specific brewery. So that could form a situation where they will be hamstrung into how they want to run their business. And yeah, these are expensive things to run.
We've got a local pub that we know that we recently heard is closing. And the reason it's closing is exactly what you've mentioned, that they're raising the rents and they're refusing to let them change and renovate the building. And they're not allowing them to do, they're not going to pay for any renovations to the bar area, which needs renovation. And they're not allowing them to change the brewery. And it's like, you're just basically locking in. You just want the lowest common denominator. We want like a little money spinner. I don't care who runs it. If it keeps turning over and someone's paying rent, that's good enough for me. And it seems like that's the interest in that respect. I wonder how much it's the case across the board.
And that's not just some pub. It's the pub where you and I met. And it's the pub where I met my wife. Yeah. And that place is central to both of our stories here in Germany and many others. And its loss will be felt among the community. Yeah.
I think in fairness, both of us know it was just a fucking building. It was the people, and we're still going to see the people. Although it is a shame that we will no longer see the pool table that we all stood around. But I think in that instance, it's sad that the way it goes isn't because of sort of the natural ebb and flow of kind of how pubs go. It's because someone just wants to make a buck and doesn't want to invest any money. And it seems to be that's the state of affairs. Let's make some money. Don't put many money in. Take as much money out.
It's the same story for the venue where I had my wedding. That's been sitting idle for years now. Nobody's agreed to the terms that the landlord wants. Those are two really nice locations close to each other in a part of Nuremberg, which really benefit from having good venues. And they're going to be empty for the foreseeable. Yeah. And this is something that isn't just a Nuremberg thing, a Berlin thing. Every major German city is facing issues like this. So it's not just Clubsterben, it's potentially Nightlife-Sterben, Kultursterben.
And it adds to the culture of the city, you know, and it adds to the kind of texture of a place. And I think with Berlin, especially when you have how intrinsic these kinds of alternative spaces have been, the formation of the identity of Berlin like clubs, I think it's really important that, I don't know, it's not like UNESCO can step in or something, but I do think the Senate has a responsibility to maybe think about marginalized communities, especially at this point in time. I think it's maybe something that is in the ethos of Berlin.
I mean, if a modern offshoot of UNESCO formed for like cultural things, Berlin nightclubs probably would be a justifiable pledge for something that deserves protecting. I think, yeah. Obviously, it doesn't quite go up with like the Elgin Marbles or something, but
no. But it's a different kind of culture and a different kind of time.
Indeed, it is,
and I think it's worth protecting. But clearly, well loved bars and clubs closing is terribly sad. But a feeling of crisis is being felt across hospitality as well. According to the Statistischem Bundesamt or Federal Statistical Office, sales fell by 3.8% in 2024, but it actually means sales are still around about 15.8% below the 2019 levels, meaning that many restaurants and bars have yet to fully recover from the pandemic, which is obviously terrible bloody news. This impacts business owners, but also customers too. In Brandenburg, the number of restaurants offering full service dropped from around 2,200 to 1,800, One in five full-service restaurants have disappeared in the last 8 years. In Bavaria, between 35 and 40% of rural restaurants have closed in the last 10 years, according to the German Hotel and Catering Association for Bavaria. Much of the blame of these closures focus on the high prices for energy, rent, and the prices of equipment and food. Another common complaint is the increased minimum wage, which is also driving up operating costs, complain restaurateurs. So I'm still not entirely sure we should be blaming the increase in the minimum wage. Like, a lot of media outlets were doing that, and a lot of politicians seem to mention it a lot. Like, oh, well, you know, we've raised the minimum wage. It's like, well, no, that's the benefit. Like, can't we focus on the fact that rent and energy prices seem to be shooting through the roof?
Yeah, it's like, oh, raising the wage, that means people that work in restaurants can afford to actually rent a place.
Exactly.
But it's bad for the customer because suddenly you have to pay more. And of course, we had, after COVID, the Mehrwertsteuer, the VAT, increases, and that also led to massive discomfort and displeasure within the restaurant community. I mean, of course, it is really sad. There are lots of restaurants that are independently run, family owned, all that kind of stuff, and they are facing an extremely tough time. You only have to go for a lunch in a sort of not well-trodden restaurant on a Tuesday, and you'll see that these places are just like clinging on, maybe making enough to pay their electricity bill, but not their staffing for those meals. And a lot of people, you go out on maybe a Friday night or a Saturday, or you go lunch on the weekend, and places are full, and you think, oh, okay, the industry is doing okay. But these busy moments hide so much actual pressure that exists in that industry today. Did a lot of work in the service industry in the past, love it, but I would hate to be there now. It's a nightmare.
As you hear, Simon is something of an expert on the topic of sort of bad restaurants, or restaurants in general, because he's been studiously watching Rosina's Restaurant over the last few months. He surely has some ideas about how restaurants could improve. So it does seem that even Michelin-starred restaurants are looking at flexible pricing, bundling menu items together, reducing prices where they can. Is this type of modern approach what's needed to save restaurants, do you think?
I mean, yeah. In fact, I mean, it's one of the hardest things, I think, for like the average German customer is fully aware of what value means. And as soon as you're providing a menu that doesn't have a connection to value, a lot of people are just immediately dissatisfied. And there has to be the feeling that you're getting something good and good value within that. If either of those elements don't exist, then people will just be dissatisfied and won't come back. One of the other major issues we have in Germany that I think is kind of unique for restaurants is that if you go on to an online review site, whether it be Google or TripAdvisor or any others, any restaurant you put in is going to have a rating of around 4.2 to 4.7. Mm-hmm.
True, yeah.
That is standard. And of course, that is not accurate. Not every restaurant in Germany is a 4 point something. But what happens in Germany is any review under 4 stars will be complained against by the restaurant owner and removed by Google or TripAdvisor.
Yeah, Google just removes them like wholesale. Like,
yeah.
Wild.
And so it is impossible to know if a restaurant is good or not.
Did you see that thing on Reddit with the woman who, she posted on a different, it wasn't on R Germany, but it was like, she got food in a Bavarian restaurant. I forget where it was. And it was literal worms in the food. And she videoed it and uploaded the video as part of the review. And that still got taken down. And you're like, eh? Like, there's evidence of what she's saying. And it was really bad. But apparently that place has now been shut down. But it's
good.
Horrific.
Shut down with a 4.1 star review.
Yeah. You've got to, you really take yourself, like, I don't know. I think this is it, isn't it? I think a lot of people, and maybe I'm doing them a disservice, but my suspicion is when you go to a lot of like different places in Germany, people are like, they'll go, oh, well, we'll just go for like, we'll go for something traditional because that'll be the safe bet.
Hmm.
And often that's the worst place. They're the tourist traps of all tourist traps. I find more often than not, solid kebab every time. There ain't no one, like, you can see what you're getting. You see what you're getting. And if it's not good, don't get it. Go to a different kebab shop.
Yeah, there's definitely validity in that. I mean, yeah, the idea of just like going and getting like a staple, like one of your favorites, the schnitzel and chips. Mm-hmm. It is coming harder and harder to find a restaurant in a city where you can get a schnitzel mit Pommes for under 10 euros.
Yeah.
Like 14, 15 euros is becoming the norm.
12 euros about the cheapest you find. No.
And that's a lot of money. For what you're getting, that is way too much. And then if you think that a beer on top of that or any soft drink could easily be heading in the direction of 4 or 5 euros, or more for a beer, of course, but a soft drink can be really expensive these days. And of course, there's no water because you have to pay for that. It's all just bad value. And so I think a lot of people think, I'm just going to eat at home. Well, I can make a schnitzel at home. Why am I doing it?
I went to the regular brewery in yesterday for the work night out. And there's two options there. Your option is you can eat inside the brewery, which is a little bit nicer, a little bit fancier. And when with all the lecturers from Bavaria come together, that's where we've gone to eat. And it's quite nice. And then there's the beer garden, which is like very much, here's a tray, go up and get some food.
Mm.
And what was interesting, I found the modeling it on, I guess with the experience you have a lot in Munich, where you go to a park and they've got a restaurant and there's a lot of that going on, or you go to that's essentially what it is. Munich gets it right 9 times out of 10, but the regular brewery, like, I don't know what it was. Like, the service is fine. It's all just fine, but the prices just seem excessive and the food doesn't seem that good. Like, if you're paying 14 euros for a veggie burger, you know, you're hiding or nothing.
It's way too much. It's way too much.
Really is. And you just like, on a one-off, you can get away with it, but it's not somewhere I'm going to go back to in another 2 years. Like, anytime anyone suggests it, I'm going to be like, it was a bit shit last time.
Now, the only places we return to are like local places that are family run and the food is good. And I'm happy to pay a little bit of a premium to support those kinds of businesses. But like, as soon as it's a chain, I'm just immediately uninvested. I don't care about some GmbH surviving and becoming profitable for the shareholders. It's a huge turnoff. So places like Hans im Glück, like, the food prices are okay for what they are. It's kind of cool in its own weird way. But I just don't want to give them my money. I'd much rather support a local family.
Yeah. I think you felt like you were supporting a local brewery, but at the same time, it just felt like a bit of a cash grab. And as you point out, like, supporting local families is really important, because as with a lot of these village pubs closing, there's another question about when local, regional or national government should step in to help. As with gay clubs in Berlin, village pubs can be the lifeblood of a community, offering a space for people to meet or simply congregate.
Yeah.
Do you think this is just another chance for government action, or alternatively, what do you think of the idea of having a traveling pub, which would be similar to like a traveling library that does like tours of local schools, but instead local areas, and you can have like your local Kneipe every second Saturday, you know? Or a local co-op pubs was an idea I'd seen. Do you fancy running your own local Kneipe with your neighbours?
I mean, we have seen stories of local communities like getting together as a group of individuals to raise money to keep a pub going, because it is a social heart of a community. These are important. And of course, you only have to look in a newspaper today to see the loneliness epidemic coming up time and time and time again. People are craving some sort of social place, some sort of social interaction. And a pub in the UK has always been that place. And of course, a Kneipe in Germany can do that very, very well indeed. So there has to be something done, because we are seeing social clubs being stripped away, becoming unaffordable. We're seeing youth clubs, etc., not getting the support they need. And if we don't have these things from a young age, then people are going to lose touch with their communities, and we're going to be just a group of strangers sitting on the U-Bahn next to each other thinking like, why do I live in a city? It's dystopian in that effect. So we need to have something happen to make this healthy again. Government action? I'm not expecting any.
That brings us to the end of the show. We're off to found our own pub. Maybe we can call it the Extraordinary Vegetable. If you're enjoying the podcast, why not give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, which only takes a minute and can really help us. You can also rate us on Spotify, so chuck some stars our way there as well. The podcast has accounts on Blue Sky and Instagram, so feel free to follow us on your social media channels of choice. Just search for Decades From Home to find us. As ever, if you have any questions, feedback, or maybe an article or topic you'd like us to cover, or you have a voicemail message you want to send for our final episode 250, reach out via any of your social media channels or get us on decadesfromhome@gmail.com. If you have any time, take a look at 40%german.com, where weekly articles are up every Saturday. Also have to say thanks, and bis zum nächsten Mal. Tschüss!
Tschüss!
Bis baldo, Ronaldo! T-5